This podcast is supported by The Real Real. You know what I love most about the holidays? Giving gifts. But not just any gifts. Real gifts. Thoughtful gifts. Oh my God, how did you know gifts? That's why I love gift shopping with The Real Real. The Real Real is the most trusted name in authenticated luxury resale. And it's a holiday shopping secret I'm going to let you in on. Whether it's a surprisingly affordable, pristine condition bag for your BFF, a vintage find that's cool enough for the Gen Zer in your life, or even something your impossible to shop for dad will love. Get used to saying, I found it on The Real Real. Seriously, with over 10,000 new arrivals dropping every day from brands like Gucci, Fendi, Prada, Louis Vuitton, Tiffany & Co., and Cartier, there's guaranteed to be something for everyone on your list. Oh, and did I mention everything's up to 90% off retail? Get $25 off your first purchase at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com to get your $25 off. TheRealReal.com.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER. Click Grainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that have come out this week, and we review them, and we never make mistakes that force us to restart the podcast all over again. That never happens. It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. We are perfect every single time.
You are the worst at this. Things happen between friends, and you just share them.
I mean, listen, I didn't say who it was who made a mistake, all right? I think listeners...
I don't think it's the guy talking who made the mistake, because you... Why would you bring it the fuck up, you asshole?
Fair point. Let's jump right into the comics with Ultimate Universe, 2 years in, number one from Marvel, written by Dennis Camp and Alex Pagnadal, art by Patrick Booten, Phil Noto, Francesco Manna, Lee Ferguson, and Javier Pulido. This is a follow-up on last year's Ultimate Universe 1 year in, which was another one-shot special, but it's also a lead-in to Ultimate Endgame, which is coming at the end of this month, and is going to end Marvel's Ultimate Universe, quote-unquote, for real. In this one, we're focusing back on this universe's version of the Guardians of the Galaxy as they look for their friends who have been lost throughout time. We get some introductions, including we knew about this in advance, Ultimate Daredevil, but some surprising ones as well that I certainly wasn't expecting as we talk about the continuity and history of the universe. I should put a spoiler warning here for all the books we're talking about today. But Pete, what did you think about this one shot?
Well, this is fun. You know, it's a nice kind of where everything is kind of in the world right now. So and it's a fun mix them up of characters. Ultimates is one of my favorite things, but I found this issue enjoyable. I also thought, like, because sometimes when they change an artist in a book, it can pull me out of it. But they did this kind of like for the Daredevil portion where they kind of changed the artist, but it kind of worked and it was nice. So I thought that was kind of cool. Other than that, I thought the, art was amazing, interesting story. So pretty solid.
I'm a little hesitant to get too far into this because I definitely liked it. It sounds like more than you did, but there's a theme that the writers are playing with in this issue that almost works against everything that we know about the Ultimate Universe and how it is supposed to work, specifically the place that they end up at the end. And without saying too much about it, you know, the Ultimate Universe has been destroyed by the Maker. Guardians of the Galaxy have come in because they said it's wrecked the future as well. And if you are feeling any anxiety about the place we are in society right now, I suggest reading this issue, because I think what Pactadol and Camp have done very nicely is give a sense of scale to that. I'm tipping my head very much, but really I want like people to read it and enjoy it, because there is a lot of fun stuff that's going on here. We do get some crazy future characters. This almost is a lot more like Legion of Superheroes than it is Guardians of the Galaxy, and that's fine and it's fun. But really the thing that has been so strong to me about the Ultimates in particular is the way it is resonating off of the modern world. And this one did it in spades in a very different and much more hopeful direction than we've gotten from a lot of the Ultimate Universe. So that's what I liked about it.
Yeah, which I think is nice. I also think the kind of like never the end was really cool, too.
Yeah. Anyway, good issue. Let's talk about DC KO Superman versus Captain Atom. Number one from DC Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Sean Isaacs. There's been a lot of conversation in our comic book club Discord about what you do or do not have to read to understand DC KO. And the short version is only the five issues of DC KO, and then the rest of these spin-offs and one-shots flesh things out or are telling their own stories that run parallel. However, this all fight month, at least the way that they're framing it in the issue, might be the exception, because we're getting eight one-shots that give us one-on-one fights really for the first time in this tournament, giving us anticipated matchups. And here, of course, it's Superman versus Captain Atom, but they lay it out as issue one, issue two, all eight of these issues, issue three, issue four, issue five. So my suggestion is do read this. That all said, what did you think of this matchup, Pete? How did you feel about how it went down?
Yeah. Should we go to our brackets? But yeah, I think this
is, I can bring them up if we want.
If we want to talk about them, but yeah, I thought this was really cool. I love this kind of issue, the kind of whole setup. I also like this kind of like heart of Apocalypse that corrupts. I think that's a cool idea of like this bloodlust that happens that kind of sets up this whole tournament. I'm glad it's not just like, hey, everybody's got to fight to the death and then the winner gets Apocalypse. Like there's also this kind of other kind of aspect that's kind of creeping in part of the story that kind of gives it an edge. So I really appreciate the kind of layers that's happening, because I do just love a giant fight, but it's also nice that we're getting other stuff here, which is cool. So yeah, really liked this issue. It seems like Captain Atom won.
No. No, he did not. He did not win.
Okay, well.
Yeah, obviously massive spoiler.
It was kind of hard to tell.
Yes, it's because Superman becomes a Captain Atom by the end. The conceit of this...
To me, that's kind of like saying like he won because he took over Superman. You know what I mean? Like
No. Superman also gave himself Captain Atom powers, because the conceit of this is you get three rounds. Each time you die, you can come back as any version of yourself, which is very fun and ridiculously video gamey, like giving yourself skins.
And he came back as gold Superman.
Yeah. So my point being that like, I think this is a fun way of exploring this. It is a little bit of a foregone conclusion, I think, with this fight. There's some other fights that I'm looking forward to more over the course of all fight month. But I thought even more than a Superman issue, this is a very good Captain Atom issue, exploring him in all of his different forms. There's one form he shows up in that I should have predicted, but it's very fun to see. So they're having a good time with this. There you go. Giant Size Criminal number one from Image Comics, written by Ed Brubaker, art by Sean Phillips. There's also a bit in here from Kieran Gillen and some other folks. We've got a big main story, which is a new story from the world of Criminal, taking place over one crazy night in Vegas. Then we get a couple of backups, including Kieran Gillen providing an RPG manual, because of course Kieran Gillen made an RPG manual for Criminal. We get a couple of Adventures in Showrunning strips.
Come on.
From Ed Brubaker. The weird thing about this clearly was timed out to be like, we're releasing it before the release of the Criminal TV show to get you super hyped for it. And we don't know when that's coming out yet. So, and I thought it was going to come out in like October or something like that. So I don't know exactly what's going on there behind the scenes, because I really feel like that should have come out this fall, but regardless,
this next coming fall.
Sure. Exactly. Maybe it's a year from now. That would make a lot of sense. Whatever it is, we got a new criminal story. That's great. They're always great, period.
Yeah, I mean, this continues to be awesome. I really did love the backup, though, the adventures in show running. And, you know, I'm sorry to immediately go to that, but, I mean, Criminal is awesome, continues to be awesome. People know it. So, you know, we've said already so many amazing things about that series.
I do think this is very fun, and I was being a little glib about it earlier, but, like, this is, whenever the show comes out, a really good issue to hand to people, because there's a nice refresher about all of the characters in Criminal, get you caught up to speed, even little notes about, like, this character is not quite as important for the TV series, or this character wasn't important for the comic book series, but is important for the TV series. So, good to see it, good to get more Criminal, keep it coming. There we go. Next up, Wiccan Witch's Road, number one for Marvel, written by Wyatt Kennedy, art by Andy Pereira. This is picking up off the end of Imperial, which found Wiccan and Hulkling escaping from space. They rocket to Earth, and here they are left in an unknown Eastern European country on their own, trying to make it out alive. And of course, they get embroiled in the Witch's Road of the title. I thought this was fantastic. I was a little iffy on it because this is, title-wise at least, pivoting off of Agatha All Along, which did come out well more than a year ago.
Oh,
I was
wow.
Like, nice time in Marvel. Good one. But this is a great Wiccan and Hulkling story. There's some genuinely creepy stuff that happens in here in a very surprising way. And it goes to a corner of the magical Marvel universe that we haven't seen before, when it often feels like we're hitting the same roads over and over again. So I was very pleasantly surprised by this and really enjoyed this issue quite a bit. Great art, great story. Excited for issue number two.
Yes, I agree with all of that. I did think this was a blast and a ton of fun and great art. And I loved the story. I felt like they brought something cool to it. I also think there is a great team and a great relationship. So it's easy to root for them. And I enjoy their stories and what's going on. But also, my love of John Wick got in the way at the end of this, because it's like, I'm sure you're familiar with this, Alvin, but they call John Wick Baba Yaga. So when the kind of evil witch at the end is like, "I'm Baba Yaga," I was like, "Oh my God, is this a John Wick crossover?" And I was like, "No, man,
wow,
that's
crazy."
Yeah, yeah.
No, it's Baba Yaga, first of all, and it is a classic Russian witch. So I was pretty psyched about that, because I love Baba Yaga, not John Wick, but the actual Baba Yaga, the witch.
Yeah, they called John Wick that because, you know, they called him the boogeyman. So I guess the boogeyman, the witch, kind of is similar. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Baba Yaga, the witch who lives in a chicken house, predates John Wick by at least 100 years, if not more.
Okay, well, good to know.
I
saw the chicken house and I thought of Howl's Moving Castle. So I'm all over the place. You know what I mean?
No, I hear you. But the thing that's weird about it is Baba Yaga, somebody killed her dog, actually.
Oh, and no. I've seen that. This before. I'll go down that road all the time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. One other thing I wanted to say about this title before we move on is, I really appreciated, in between all the magical shenanigans, that the first half of the issue just has Hulkling and Wiccan trying to survive in the woods and figure out how to do it. And I thought that was some of the best just like character work that I saw in a comic all week, just sort of calming down and having these characters talk and interact and figure things out. I thought was great. So really good first issue. Next up, Absolute Green Lantern, number 9 from DC Comics, written by Al Ewing, art by Sid Kotian. In this issue, Jo is reuniting with her ex-girlfriend, and they're going through some stuff there because Hal Jordan is down and out. Meanwhile, there's a new character on the field called Nemesis who is coming after them, and a bunch of other things are going on as well. What did you think about this one?
Goldfinger! Yeah, this is great. This is awesome. Another great kind of like, we're getting to know Jo more, which I'm very excited to get a little bit more of her backstory. She's one of my favorite of the Lanterns. So, yeah, I also like the villain here, the psycho killer who can take their face off. Take your face off. So, yeah, interesting villain. I'm hooked. This seems great.
I really like this as well. I thought this series has been picking up quite a bit as it's gone. This is a little more spy domestic drama, which is fun after the very heady past couple of issues. But I love how it's just like there's a little bit of a sense of an Easter egg hunt going on here because everybody has a very pointed name for somebody in the main DC universe. Everything is some other thing. So you're like, ooh, that's different. Oh, that guy. Oh, Terry. His name. I know who Terry is. Okay, here we go. So there's.
You love the tea. Not, you love. You're here for I the do. Tea.
I am. Spill that tea, Green Lantern. Spill that tea. Absolute tea, more like it.
Oh, boy.
Anyway, great issue. G.I. Joe number 15 from Skybound and Image Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Tom Riley. This is continuing the Dreadnought War storyline,
yes!
Which I think I forgot to put the second part in the stack, and that is entirely on me.
Oh,
I'm
how
so sorry,
dare
Pete.
You? Jesus.
So we missed talking about the introduction of Road Pinky.
Come on, Road Pinky. Come on, dude. You were like, what? I didn't think I'd ever see a comic with Road Pig in there. But guess what? That day is now.
I don't think I used those words, but I definitely didn't expect it for sure. But Road Pig has captured both Duke and Cobra Commander, and the Dreadnoughts are coming for them. Pete, you're losing your mind. Clearly.
Yeah, I mean, this is great. This is just, I feel like a little kid watching my Saturday morning cartoons, eating cereal, having the best time. I mean, great-ish. You got Duke and Cobra Commander being held by Road Pig and the Dreadnought, you know, and he's kind of introduced himself to the Dreadnoughts, which, you know, he's a part of the Dreadnoughts if you go back with the lore, so that was kind of a fun. But yeah, then we have this secret meeting with the Baroness Destro and the U.S. military here. Oh boy, what's going down here? Great action. This is just unbelievable art and a blast and a half. So the younger me is beside himself having a great time.
I have a quick question for you. Mm-hmm. And generally, I really enjoy this. Tom Riley's art is great. This arc is very, very fun. I love seeing bad guy and good guy have to team up to fight bigger bad guy. Always a fun trope. Road Pig.
Thing. Road Pig. Come on, man. You don't like a Cinderbrock on the end of a stick? What's up?
No, he's very cool. He's very Mad Max. Right. 100%. Sure. Would be hanging out in Thunderdome for sure. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He mostly hangs around a house. So shouldn't he be like House Pig and not Road Pig? Because he doesn't go out on a road at any point.
Well, in this
I'm
comic.
I'm honestly not even, but I'm not even sure if there's a road in front.
Dreadnoughts travel on the roads and swamps, you know.
But he's not a Dreadnought yet. He's a Dreadnought at the end. So he should call himself House Pig, and then he gets in like a car, and he's like, you know what? Road Pig.
Dude. That's not how nicknames
work. I'm
just
saying it'd be appropriate. That's not, oh, okay. Why is he called Road Pig then if he never gets on
well,
the road?
Well, he is on the road a lot. It's just not in this issue, okay?
Right.
That's how he got his nickname.
Yeah, but how did he get his nickname in this? Because he's not on the road and there are no roads around. He's in the middle of the desert in a house.
I mean, that's not how life
he
works.
He should be called Sandy House Pig.
You can't just be like when you meet somebody for the first time, be like, hey, your name doesn't make sense right now. You know, like, you know, before
you do
when
that
he was on the
all
road.
All the time.
Oh, no, here we go.
Constantly, yeah. Pete. Come on.
Oh, man.
Anyway, otherwise, I mean, this comic is bad because of that, but otherwise it's good. Okay, Doctor Strange, number one.
How dare you? Oh, this comic that's based on G.I. Joe. I hate all the G.I. Joe references, but other than that, it's great.
Yeah, I do love the staples in this spine. No, it's really good. Doctor Strange number one from Marvel, written by Derek Landy, art by Ivan Fiorelli. The new status quo of Doctor Strange is he is the Sorcerer Supreme of Asgard, and here he needs to travel through the Nine Realms to solve a mystery, maybe rewrite history.
What?
Teaming up with Angela. Woohoo!
I have a question.
Yeah, what's up?
I was having a great time until the last panel. And, you know, obviously I miss things when I read comics. You know, that's why it's sure. nice to be able to talk to you about comics.
Yeah, well,
you're so up? Understanding. Did he turn himself into Mephisto at the end, or am I just jaded with a horrible history?
No, you're just jaded. Okay. There's a lot going on in this comic, like too much going on in this comic, because they keep jumping through the realms and they're explaining things and they're explaining mythology. And
I was having a blast, and then that last panel,
you're having a good time?
I was like, well, okay. What? But who's, and what's that? Are you just an evil demon?
No, he just uses a, yeah, he uses like an evil demon
spell. Oh, okay. Cool.
So yeah, I don't know. This didn't really work for me just because there was so much going on and it felt like it was going in so many different directions. I'm not really into Angela as a character in the Marvel Universe, though I think having her butt up against Doctor Strange is potentially fun. I do like Derek Landy's stuff quite a bit, so I'm going to stick with this for sure for at least another issue, but there's just like plot, 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 plot going on
here. Yeah, but also I thought the bad guy, Verboden, if I'm saying that correctly, he's fun.
Yeah.
He
Verboden.
He
I
makes
thought
fun
maybe
of,
he was Malekith for a second, yeah. but then he didn't have like the...
He looks like one of the gargoyles. I thought that he was fun. I also liked how he made fun of Doctor Strange's mustache. I thought that was a fun yeah. bit.
I had a little bit, maybe I missed something, and maybe you could help out here, when they were like, oh no, it's Verboden, he's back. I was like, am I supposed to know who this is?
Yeah, man. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Do you know who Verboden
oh,
is?
Oh, yeah, dude. He's the, I mean, go back, dude. It might be Strange Tales he was in. There was a bunch of, he goes.
you mentioned Strange Tales all the time. Mm-hmm. And that's crazy to me because I don't think anybody ever mentioned Strange Tales. I don't think the people who wrote Strange Tales mentioned Strange Tales.
Come on. A lot of great characters came out of Strange Tales.
Verboden.
Yeah.
Top for what?
Everybody's list.
Great. All right. Well, anyway, DC KO Batman Night Fight number 2 from DC Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Dan Mora. Batman has been killed in the first pre-round of DC KO, but he did a little trick, and so the Heart of Apocalypse is punishing him by making him fight all of his Robins as all of his Robins have become multiversal type Batman. It's pretty complicated, the concept.
Yeah.
But basically, like, Nightwing has perfected being Batman and got all crime out of Gotham City. Batman has realized it's wrong and how to beat him, does beat him in this issue, which shunts him to another reality where Jason Todd is Batman. Things are much worse there, as you may imagine. But what did you think about this second issue?
I just want to take a moment before I get into this fantastic issue that I love very much. The fact that I tried to hastily Google Verboden, the comic book character, and you know, I got the response that there is no prominent or widely recognized comic book character specifically named Verboden.
Yes.
So
I don't think he existed before this issue.
So, yeah, I guess maybe I was wrong about that, but... I thought that was kind of funny. Usually when you Google stuff like that, it's like, oh, it's this issue and this, you know, but, okay, I'll move on. But, all right. Yeah. I mean, this is just, a fun kind of like Batman versus Batman kind of thing. And my Robins are more badass than your Robins. I was confused, but also amazed. The art is unbelievable. It had like kind of Jim Lee vibes to it a little bit. But yeah, this is an absolute blast. Night Fight is what you want. You know what I mean? You want different Batmans from different universes going up against each other, wondering who's the most Batman of the Batmans.
I thought this was really good, and I keep beating the same drum with this DC KO stuff, but what works nicely about this is that Joshua Williamson has not forgotten the emotional thrust of this, what it would mean for Batman to specifically see Dick Grayson in this situation. I'm very interested where Batman is going to end up at the end of the series.
Yeah, that's going to be really...
Because He's pushing himself to really dark directions. Well, yes, he's dead. That's one thing. The other two things are that when he comes up against Jason Todd, he goes through yet another change, and he has to kind of like, he's sort of turning towards evil. And I think that's what the Heart of Apocalypse
does
is probably doing to him. So I don't know. It's pushing them in some interesting directions. It's giving Dan Mora a chance to design some crazy bat costumes. So yeah, I'm having a lot of fun.
It is weird to me that he's like, oh, it's Jason Todd. And I was like, oh, it's kind of formal. I'm surprised he doesn't call him like JT or something. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Well, you would do that because you're always naming people despite the situation that they're in.
That's right.
Inferno Girl Red, Volume 2, Number 1 from Image Comics, written by Matt Groom, art by Erica Durso. This is the second volume of the series, set in the Massiverse, which also includes Radiant Black and other titles. And Inferno Girl Red is a legacy hero who lives in Apex City, which has been taken to another part of the universe. It's just kind of floating there. That doesn't really play into this issue, but basically she is the lone protector of the city. And in this issue, some new threats are coming her way, as well as new allies. I think we're big fans of the first series here. How did you feel about the return?
Yeah, I was, and I love this as well. I really like how it feels like the main universe. You know what I mean? It's different, but like the same, if that makes sense. It feels like it could really fit in really nicely. It has this kind of same kind of look. I don't know if the same kind of coloring or what's happening, but they're doing such a great job with this. This really feels like it's part of the massive verse, but also has its own kind of feel. So I'm super impressed with this. Very cool. I don't think I would be, if you can't bring me into a room with a giant glowing red Dragon Ball or green Dragon Ball, I should say, and to be able to then continue a conversation. I wouldn't be able to kind of move past that. You know what I mean? So felt very seen in that kind of setup. So I thought that was fun.
Totally, totally, totally. I couldn't agree more with everything that you were saying, Pete. I do think this is really good. I like the character dynamics here. It's a good young hero in over her head, which is always a good place to play someone. Erica Durso's art is great. It's just really good, very clean, future seeming superhero art, some great coloring on this book as well, like you were saying. So definitely pick it up. Highly recommend picking up the first Inferno Girl Red to understand what's going on here, because it really hits the ground running, even though it is volume two. But I'm excited to follow this. Hulk Smash Everything, Number 1 from Marvel, written by Ryan North, art by Vincenzo Caratu. This is a series where Hulk, per the title, smashes increasingly weird things. In this issue, it's Hulk versus Doctor Strange, though he ends up in dinosaur times by the end and is smashing some dinosaurs. We know later in the series he's going to be smashing a black hole. Who will win in that fight? This is great. This is everything that I want from Ryan North. Like, I was feeling a little conflicted while I was reading this because I don't want to pigeonhole writers, but Ryan North is so good at being like, let me write a pretty funny, very specific, mostly one-shot situation for this character or group of characters that is relatively based in some sort of science or high concept. And that's exactly what happens here. And it's just really fun. There are multiple times that I laughed out loud reading this book. The leader is the villain, and seeing the leader dressed up as Doctor Strange running away from Hulk.
That was fun.
It's just a very funny visual. Yeah. So shout out to Vincenzo Caratu as well for perfectly matching the tone that Ryan North sets out there.
Yeah, I think it's such a fun combination of writer artist here, and it is great. This is like, I think the title says everything. It's a fun setup, a fun premise. And it's, you know, the classic kind of like, you know, someone's going to bug the Hulk and he's just like, fucking leave me alone, man. And, you know, he gets kind of set up in this by the leader. And it's just it's awesome. It's great. The art is fun. The way the leader looks like Doctor Strange and how that's all done is really fun. Also, it's just fun to see Wong, you know. I'm like, give me a little Wong. You know what I mean? But yeah, this delivers. Really, if you're like, oh, I don't know if I should get this or not, it's definitely worth checking out.
Batman number 4 from DC Comics, written by Matt Fraction, art by Jorge Jimenez. This issue introduces a new villain called the Minotaur, who is arranging all organized crime. I believe in this issue, to paraphrase, they say he's making it very organized. And we see exactly what that means for the crime bosses of Gotham, as well as Batman, who's starting to realize he is in over his head. Yeah. I've really been enjoying this run, and I enjoyed this issue as well. The one little caveat, the thing that holds me up a little bit, is Chip Zdarsky introduced something very similar in his run on Batman. There was, was it called like the accountant or something, who was like, I'm outside of this, and I sort of help keep things organized. I don't know. It was just adjacent enough that I was like, this feels similar to that. But I trust Matt Fraction. I trust Jorge Jimenez. So I'm interested to see where this goes.
Yeah, I agree with everything you're saying there. I didn't feel that way about the Minotaur. I just think that, like, oh, Minotaur is a fun kind of labyrinth villain. So fun choice to kind of make this guy, like, super organized and trying to have, like, a secret underground kind of crime society. There was a fun moment where Batman realizes, like, he's not as tuned into Gotham as he thinks. You know, there's this kind of fun thing where it's like, you don't know about, you know, this secret organization where you think it's been, things have been going smooth in Gotham. So fun, right? Where Batman's, he's not usually tricked so easily. So kind of fun to see him trying to play catch up. Great setup, cool villain design. Yeah, so I'm on board having a good time with this.
Dread the Halls, 2025, from Image Comics, written by Jordan Hart and Chris Ryle, art by Luana Vecchio, Lee Ferguson, Keith Jones, Walter Pax, and Fabio Veras. This is a collection of stories about the holidays, usually with some sort of a horror bent to them. It is something that they did last year. They also did Dread the Hall H for San Diego Comic-Con this year. All of them are really fun, and this collection is no exception. I thought all of these stories were great, creative, really funny, very dark. I had a really good time picking this up and reading it. Pete, maybe it was too scary for you, but maybe it was too festive at the same time. I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like this is a fun collection of stories. Really love the first one and the second one. We got Santa.
What about the third one and the fourth one?
I'm getting there. I'm getting there. Oh, Jesus. Okay. All right. You know, you got Santa and the aliens. But then, you know, the third one, we get this evil wooden elf story, and that got really creepy and fucked up. But I also like the art choice they made. They kind of did this black and white with kind of splashes of dramatic color, which I thought really worked out well. But like you're saying, overall, just a great collection and kind of fun ideas, well put together, worth checking out. Sometimes in a collection you get a little dip, but I felt like they did a good job of keeping the bar. Yeah.
Consistently high quality. If you're looking for some dark horror stories, and there's no dearth of those, including a title we'll be getting to later on in the stack, but this one is well worth picking up. Very fun. And now the age is upon us once again, and it is time for the age of revelation.
Oh, boy.
Is the revelation upon you, Pete? Are you feeling the revelation? Are you tasting it? Smelling it?
How you feel about it?
Not great, Bob, but we got three titles to talk about. Kicking it off with Binary, number 3 from Marvel, written by Stephanie Phillips, art by Giada Belviso. I should mention this is the final month of the Age of Revelation, so all these third issues we're going to start talking about are the final issues of these titles. This one is about Captain Marvel has Phoenix powers. She thought Jean Grey was back last issue. It's not. It's Madeline Pryor
who wants twist. The Phoenix Force,
but also then Jean Grey is back. There you go.
Well, first I'd like to start off by saying cool cover.
Yep.
I like the cover. You know, we kind of got this fight for the Phoenix Force and the kind of twist of like, it's not Jean, it's Madeline, and then Carol kind of taking over and having the fun kind of 80s spandex transformation that we all have known to love when it comes to the Phoenix. So I guess fun passing of the torch, but I don't know what this means or what's going to happen, but I don't know, I thought the art was good.
I think we said this the last issue, but the thing that worked for me about this series was the COVID denial section, because this takes place in a town that has decided the X virus that is outside the dome they've been protected from doesn't exist anymore. They're being lied to, and they could just go outside the town and it'll be fine. That is 100% not true. The only thing that is stopping it is the Phoenix Force. That part to me worked. Whenever we turned, it's very weird that this is the part that worked, but whenever we turned to the townspeople and what they were going through, that felt very grounded and interesting and helped flesh out, excuse me, the world of Age of Revelation. The stuff that didn't work for me as well was the Phoenix Force stuff, because I felt like they even make a joke about it in the issue that we've done this a million
sure
times.
Have.
So that was a bit of a bummer, but interesting ideas, even if they didn't all come together. Laura Kinney, Sabretooth, number 3 from Marvel, written by Erica Schultz, art by Valentina Pinti. In this issue, we're following Laura Kinney, who is re-brainwashed by Revelation to attack Araco and take the mutants that were sent there back to Earth. And if the mutants are Aracoing, don't come a-knocking, I always say. Right, Pete?
No. Please stop saying that right now.
I always say
please
that.
Please stop. Please stop.
Non-stop. Anyway, some big stuff, I guess, goes down to this issue as well. What'd you think, Pete?
Well, you know, everything that I kind of thought was kind of blown away by the big reveal at the end here. Also, this kind of like X-23, but not. It's like Sabretooth, and it's like bad, but maybe there's some goodness thing is a little confusing, but hey, I'm all for it. You know what I mean? You had me in X-23 and then got me confused with if it's really Sabretooth. Anyways, all that aside, I was really thrown by the ending where this kid maybe murders everybody, and then Apocalypse is like, finally, now I have the chosen child and I can go rule the world. And I was just like, ugh.
This is one that I feel like, just from a reader's perspective, obviously we don't know what went on behind the scenes. Erica Schultz is really good at this character stuff, and she knows what she's doing.
Great
she's
stuff.
Writing Laura Kinney,
amazing
other,
writing,
Gabby. But it got lost in the whole crossoverness of everything, and maybe the compressed nature of doing this in 3 issues, where Laura felt like she was like, well, I kind of want to support my family, and now I don't, and now I'm brainwashed, and now I'm not. And it's just like a lot of back and forth in a very small amount of real estate. I don't know. Again, like, very similar to the previous one, the character dynamics worked. It's when we got into the plot dynamics that it got confusing, I think. And let's see the last one, Amazing X-Men, number 3, written by Jed McKay, art by Mahmoud Azrar. This is following the team of X-Men, including Cyclops, who has been sent to his future body, and Beast, who has also been sent to his future body. And in this issue, they find out just what Revelation is up to and why they think it's going to go all wrong. How'd you feel about this one? Was it a triple miss for you this week, Pete?
Well, yes. I think that, you know, this is tough for me because I'm mad at Beast, and then he's like impressed with the evil plan. I was like, Beast, who the fuck are you right now? Like, I don't even know anymore. But then, correct me if I'm wrong, and I probably am, but then at the end, Apocalypse shows up with a walking Charles Xavier?
Yeah, that was set up a couple of issues back in Tales of Revelation,
okay,
or whatever that's called.
All right. Yeah. But just sometimes it's like, is that really who I think it is? And a lot of times it's not. So I just wanted to make sure that, like, okay, cool, this is who it is. So I guess exciting, but then I was confused by the last one. I was like, I thought Apocalypse was only rolling with kids, so I don't know.
So I got to say, I actually kind of like this one just because it addressed the concerns that I had with the previous 2 issues, which is that it really dialed down the action immensely in this issue and focused on the character dynamics, as well as moving forward the overall plot of Age of Revelation. I thought there was some There was an interesting scene with Beast and this bird girl who he is in a romantic relationship with
in the future,
he doesn't know about. Yeah. There's some fun stuff with Dark Glob Herman in this issue as well.
Dark, bro, just shooting people. Like, yo, guy, what? How is that cool? There's, Scott, you're not going to pull him aside? Like, nothing?
There's a fun bit where Psylocke is like, don't worry, I got this, guys. I used to be a chorister. And they're like, oh, hello, Psylocke. Wait, why are you wearing an X? And she's like, oh, no. And it just goes terribly wrong. I thought that was
fun. You
got to
be aware of what flair you have on. You know what I mean?
100%. Yeah. So I don't know. This kind of worked for me. There's also like a surprising twist involving what's been going on with Magneto that makes me more curious to follow the main X-Men book coming out of this than I have been prior to this event.
Well, that's exciting.
So I don't know. I was not high on this, but this felt to me like the spine book that I've been missing from this event all along. But granted, it's also the last issue of this, and we're ending this.
Well,
event,
I'm glad they won you over at the end. That's exciting.
I don't know if they won me over.
Well,
but
it gave you a little hope, it seems like.
Yeah, they got like a ground rule double. Is that a way of putting it?
Yeah.
Yep. Birds of Prey, number 28. That was it for the Age of Revelation, by the way. Birds of Prey, number 28 from DC Comics, written by Kelly Thompson, art by Sammy Basri and Vincente Quifentes. This is the final issue of the title, the last issue of Birds of Prey. It all wraps up here for the Boyds. Pete, you're clapping. What'd you think?
Get up out of your seats, folks. Kelly Thompson. Come on. Kelly Thompson. This is just immaculate. This is just great comics. And look, it's an ice cream man who isn't creepy. I can be excited to see an ice cream truck in DC again, which is a great feeling. I didn't know how bad.
Literally a cool cover, right?
Pete? Yeah, there we go.
Because it's an ice cream truck.
Yeah. This is a legendary run. I love this so very much. Great art, fun adventures. This was just awesome. This was great teamwork. It ended really well. You know, it's like a mutual breakup at the end, which never happens. Just wow. Just magic from start to finish. Amazing character moments. This had everything. Total package.
This is a great run. I will say it does feel like it wraps things up a little quickly, which may have just been a function of the series got canceled, though I know Kelly Thompson has said that she was part of the decision to cancel it rather than drag it on longer or push for dragging it on longer. But the last couple of pages feel like they jam in a bunch of things that could have used a little more breathing room potentially. Regardless, like you said, this has been a great run. Sammy Basri's art has been incredible in particular.
Yes.
Kelly Thompson, unimpeachable on everything.
I mean, Kaiju, Barbara. I mean, we had Gargoyle. Just Barda. Just absolutely just fantastic.
Yeah, there's a fun bit towards the end where they're like, perhaps they will call this the Barda era. And everyone's like, boo. And they're like, okay, maybe Barda and Small Bat. And they're like, all right, maybe that works. And I was like, no, either of them work.
Yeah.
Because Barda is great.
Yep.
Put Kelly Thompson on a Barda solo series. Make it happen. Startling Tales of Santa Claus 2025 annual from Image Comics, written by Benito Serrano, art by Sikai, Evan Doc Shaner, Anthony Clark, and Emmett Graham. This is that other title I was alluding to earlier that has a bunch of short spooky tales of Christmas.
Yeah.
How'd you feel about this one, Pete?
Well, yeah, first story was adorable. You know, you got Santa, you got this kind of like soul mouse thing that's also adorable. Just amazing art. I really love the art style. Yeah, this is a fun collection of stories. Then they had like a fun kind of like Santa pulp that tricks, you know, has some little tricks up his sleeve. I just thought this was just really creative, but I also really love the art style of it. They did a great job of really having a cool through line.
Yeah, I would say this is worth it for the art alone.
Wow. I've never heard that before. That's a cool saying. You should start saying that more.
Thank you. The Sikai art reminded me a little bit. It looks like the animation style from like the Island of Misfit Toys.
Oh, yeah.
The claymation.
Sure.
No, it's not claymation, though. Oh, my God. It's stop motion or something. There was a specific name for
it. I thought it was claymation.
Who is no, it's not claymation. Whatever it is, I'm blanking on words at this point of the evening. But it looks like that, but still on the page and essentially comics. So that's cool. Evan Doc Shader art, always great. So there you go. I'll look it up while you're talking about the next one. But Ultimate X-Men, number 22 from Marvel by Peach Momoko. We haven't picked up this title for a while, but I thought it would be worth checking back in. Now we're heading towards the end of the Ultimate Universe. And we do get a wrap-up of the main plot of the series here. It seems like with a final battle. And I'll tell you what, this is really gross and very cool.
Yeah, you want to talk about worth it for the art alone. You had me at Peach Momoko. I mean, that's just, I'm here to see what kind of creative, weird, cool stuff is going to happen. So, yeah, let this artist do anything they want, and I will show up and buy it. So, yes, please, more, and yeah, creative, creepy, crazy, all the things.
Yeah. First of all, I'll just mention I was thinking of, oh my God, I just lost it. Rankin Bass. So there's that.
Mm-hmm.
And then there you go. I don't know. I still haven't found the animation style. Anyway, this is really good. I don't want to stop talking so I can Google this thing. Yeah. Anyway, okay. Cheetah and Cheshire Rob the Justice League, number 5 from DC Comics, written by Greg Rucka, art by Nicholas Scott. This issue, they're finally robbing the Justice League. Five issues and it happened. And I thought this heist was great, but also I've loved every issue of the series. So what about you, Pete?
This is awesome. I had a blast. It happened. I was so excited. Great art, great action. This was a great issue, tight package. Yeah, I love the robbery, the whole setup. It made sense. When it first started, I was like, Cheetah, how dare you think you could get away with this? But then when you hear the plan, you're like, okay, this is cool and fun. So yeah, I'm having a blast with this.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this. The art is great from Nicola Scott.
Yes. Great face stuff, you know?
I'm excited to see what happens. This is twisty, turny.
Just like the reactions between Cheetah and Wonder Woman, just really cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's good. Probably stop motion animation, but I feel like I was thinking about something else. I don't know. Anyway, Rook Exodus number 9 from Ghost Machine and Image Comics, written by Jeff Johns, art by Jason Fabok. In this issue, our dudes with animal masks who control animals meet some sort of man who can control spiders, a spider man, if you will. Yeah, which sounds very exciting. I hope somebody does something more with it. Anyway, and it's pretty terrifying because Pete hates spiders.
That's very true. Yeah, and I thought that, like, I thought this worked because what's the creepiest thing in the whole universe? Spiders. And if there was one person who had spider powers, everybody else would just be, yeah. So spiders win. They're the creepiest and the most fucked up. And this holds true in this comic because, you know, with all the other kind of people who have, like, pig powers or other animal powers or whatever, shout-outs to Road Pig, I just feel that, like, the fact that, like, they were, like, they look under the max and the human was like, help! It's fucking spiders! They're the creepiest, most evil, fucked-up thing ever! They trump everything. So, yeah, I thought that this was just, as someone who thinks spiders are creepy, worked on many levels. So I enjoyed the choice that they made here, that spiders win in this animal kind of fucked up world. So, yeah, I thought this was a fun kind of twist to, we've been slowly kind of gathering information, and this was kind of like came out of left field, but I thought it was fun.
Yeah. Venom 252 from Marvel, written by Al Ewing, Jordan Morris, and Tom DeFalco, art by Paco Medina, Jesus Saiz, and Ron Frenz. In this issue, we're getting three stories of kind of mashup stories. The first one, we find Venom pretending to be Spider-Man.
Yeah.
The second one, we get where this came from. Originally, I believe this was the story where this costume came from, and they decided to use it in the main story, where it's, I'm forgetting what it is, but it's like Eddie Parker, the venomous Spider-Man, the symbiotic Spider-Man, I think that's what it is. So it's just a weird mashup world there. And then we get a classic tale of Venom from a classic team, Tom DeFalco and Ron Frenz. I thought this was a great package. The first story was so funny.
Yeah.
Like, again, laugh out loud funny while this issue. And I'll just mention this is too much information, but I was like, really sick when I was reading this book, and like I couldn't feel my nose and I couldn't feel my face, and I was reading it and I kept being like, ow.
Well, it's impressive that when you're in that much pain, the fact that it's that funny, that even when you don't mm-hmm. want to laugh, it's making you laugh. That's impressive, you know?
That's why I brought it up, Pete. That's exactly why I brought it up.
But I'm sorry to agree with you then.
So sorry. Who's the real road pig here, I wonder?
Yeah, I thought this was a blast. Really funny. The like Venom being like, you know, oh, I can't smile because he'll know it's me. Great. And also the kind of Doc Ock immediately knowing what's going on was fun. But I tell you where it didn't get fun, and you will be really surprised to hear this, is MJ asking out the anti-Venom for coffee.
MJ and Flash Thompson, I'm into it.
Thank you.
Make it happen.
No, yes, that's a thing of nightmares. Woo. It's just coffee. It's never just coffee. How dare you, MJ? How dare you?
She likes her coffee like she likes her men.
What's it?
Covered in goop.
Legless? I don't know what...
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know where I was going with that. I really like the story by Jordan Morris as well. I thought he did a great job with this one. It was a fun, weird mashup world that I would love to visit more. And just getting a classic story from Tom DeFalco and Ron Frenz was a lot of fun as well.
I thought Jordan Morris, maybe Jordan D. White, was faking a pen name or something. But it turns out
Jordan Morris is a great guy.
A real person.
We've had him on the show.
Real person, yes. Yeah.
Real person.
I just had a moment. Person. I just had a moment where I was like, this would be kind of funny.
And now, just to check, you are Pete Hegseth, the guy who is in charge of Department of...
I hate to break it to you. We've been doing this show a long time together. I'm not that.
Well, I just assume that all people with the same first name are the same person.
That's a horrible assumption. That would really make your life...
That's what you just did. You just
a living hell. That makes no sense that you would do that.
JSA 14 from DC Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Gavin Guidry. We are continuing the JSA Year One storyline as the team slowly comes together, solving a bunch of mysteries, maybe rewriting some history.
No,
this
one, stop.
We'll find out.
I don't know what's going on with you shoehorning that in, but...
shoehorning? It happens so naturally. Yeah. I love this arc. I said this with the last issue as well. Gavin Guidry is great for this sort of thing. And JSA kind of never works better than when it's in this, like, World War II, post-World War II era that it's supposed to be in. Like, the characters just work there. Putting them in the noir, putting them in the vigilante, man on the street, it's great.
Yes. Yeah, this is great. Love the art. Love the story. Really love the end, too. Cool Wonder Woman Adam stuff. Yeah, this is just great art, great story. Such a great combination in amazing hands, and they're killing it.
Something is Killing the Children, number 45 from Boom Studios, written by James Tynion IV, art by Werther De La Dera. We are continuing the arc that has found Erica in a snowy The Shining-type hotel
with
her mentor, trying to kill some monsters and save the kids there. I gotta say, this is maybe the best issue of this title in a really long time, mainly because normally we get, like, as much as I don't want to give it up to him, but Justin is right. Like, a lot of times this issue is like, here's a 20-page wash of what's going on with Erica. Like, it's just sort of like more of that, and it's always good, but it always just kind of is. This one... Erica and her mentor really have it out, and we get a shocking revelation about the status quo of where she is that really amps up the stakes immeasurably here. I thought it was really well done, really emotional. Great issue.
Yeah, this is a phenomenal issue. I agree with all that. I don't want to say it's a great issue that in a while that you said, just because I've been loving all of it, but also just great cover, just really cool. Sets an amazing tone for this. Yeah, this continues to be such a badass, amazing book. JT4 is killing this in many ways. And so, yeah, just so happy to get this story, and just is just such a smart choice to make with this book right now. I'm absolutely loving this. Can't say enough about the art, the world building. I mean, this is so impressive. We got this story in little chunks, and it's been spread out for years. And I've just been enjoying every little morsel and every issue that they put out. And it's just really impressive work.
Fantastic Four, number 6 from Marvel, written by Ryan North, art by Umberto Ramos. Lots going on in this issue, including the FF fighting a bunch of monsters at the beginning, per the cover. They're the different monsters. And then most of the issue is taken up with Maria Hill explaining that she's restarting S.H.I.E.L.D. and wants to restart the Future Foundation as well. What'd you think, Pete?
First off, Roberto Ramos's art is just phenomenal. Anytime he's on a project, I'll just show up for the art alone. Yeah, this is great. I had a blast with this fun kind of tricking robots with bending light. Awesome nerdy stuff. Love that. Really cool kind of reveal at the end. I'm sure Galactus just wants to say hi to her buddy Sue Storm. You know what I mean? No big deal.
There's a lot of fun butts in here, but this also felt like too many things going on in one issue.
Did you say some fun butts in this issue? Is that what you just said?
I mean, there are.
Okay.
But I said bits.
Oh, okay. That makes more sense.
Like I said earlier in the stack, Ryan North's strength is writing these done-in-one mysteries or weird sign things or something like that. And this just takes on too many things. It's like providing a bridge from One World Under Doom to what's coming up afterwards, as well as the next arc of Fantastic Four. And I'm just like, I enjoyed all of the things individually, but it didn't quite make a cohesive issue. Hmm. You know, maybe it'll come back and add up later. I'm certainly going to keep reading this, but that's my take, and I'm staying.
I just thought the alphabet fingers was a little too much and was a little creepy, that's all.
That was creepy, but it was fun. Poison Ivy, number 39 from DC Comics, written by G. Willow Wilson, art by Marcio Takara. In this issue, after coming to a bit of an understanding. You want to talk
about spilling the tea? Here we go.
Poison Ivy and Janet really
from HR.
Go at it in this issue, both emotionally and physically. You okay, Pete?
No, I'm not okay, because I don't believe Janet works for any HR, because this is against all HR regulations, to have a kind of relationship like this. So I think DC should be contacting HR about Janet. But then Harley shows up at the end, and I'm like, whoa, how's this going to all unfold? It's all upside down, but the art is phenomenal. This has been such a fun, cool ride that they've been doing, and I'm shipping Harley and Ivy. So Janet broke my heart. You know, I was hoping for Janet and Killer Croc, but that didn't happen. So now I got to go back to other ships.
This is a great issue of this book, with some real upsetting underlying horror happening throughout here, leading to the surprise end of the issue. Also, I'm surprised you didn't say great cover on this issue.
Yeah,
with
this is a great
Ivy
cover, yeah.
Licking blood off of her fingers. It's a close up on her. She's shaded.
A little creepy.
I thought this was really, it's very creepy, and it's supposed to be creepy, so it's really well done. This title is always great, but this one, finally getting into it with Janet and Ivy, I thought was very much needed and very well
done. Where are you on the ships, bro?
I mean, it's Harley and Ivy, but I think it's very interesting how casual and relatively open they are about the relationship, even though you get that panicked moment with Ivy and Janet at the end. So I don't know. Cool stuff. Kill All Immortals 2, number 2 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Zach Kaplan, art by Fico Osseo. Our Norse immortals have become mortal, but they want their immortality back, or at least they want to not be killed by Genghis Khan and his immortal family. We've got a lot of mythology dump in this issue and a spark of a new romance for our main character. What did you think,
Pete? Well, first off, I just want to say I'm sure a lot of people didn't want to be killed by Genghis Khan, but that didn't work out for a lot of people. But, no, this comic here, first off, amazing cover, really badass, kind of cool, set the tone. Yeah, love the twist at the end. This continues to be great, cool art style, great story, solid action. This is a tight package right here.
Yeah, this is really good. I really like how they're fleshing out the mythology and the scale of this book quite a bit. Great art from Fico Osseo throughout. Excited to see how it goes because it's going in some surprising directions that I did not see coming. Death Dog, number 2 from Ahoy Comics, written by Bryce Ingman, art by Alan Robinson. This is the second and final issue of this title, about a boy befriending a robot dog. It was supposed to be a killer, but he's more filler, let's be honest.
Oh, hey.
What? No, filler's good. I like filler.
Okay.
What'd you think, Pete?
Fun cover. The potato bit is hilarious every time. Yeah, this is just, you know, classic story about a boy and his killer robot dog. You know what I mean? We've seen it 1,000 times. It's horrible how the police treat homeless people in this comic. But amazing art. This was cool. I like this.
Yeah, classic Ahoy book. Very satirical throughout. I was bummed there's this only 2 issues. Yeah. You know, they say, hey, buy it. Maybe we'll make more. And I do hope they do because this is a really nice start for this. It really just feels like it's beginning at the end there. And there's a lot more they could do in this world. Last but not least, from Robot Dog to Robot Robot, The Terminator, Santa Claus is Coming to Town, number 1 from Dynamite, written by Polina Ganashow, art by Kendall Good. We had Polina Ganashow on the podcast to talk about this book a couple of months back, so check that out. But per the title, it is Christmas time in the future, and the Resistance is talking about old Christmas while they're hunted by a Terminator dressed as Santa Claus. Pete, take it away.
This was a fucking blast. I love this. I can't believe you had this all the way at the end of the stack. I feel like it should be brought up more in the beginning because it was just so fun. Such a great idea. I thought I read the title and I was like, this is ridiculous. Hilarious cover. But man, the one-liners, the kind of fun that they were having in this book really won me over. The E.T. bit was hysterical. Yeah, I mean, I just had a blast with this. I was so surprised by this comic. The writing was so sharp. The art was amazing. The twists and turns of this is just fantastic. Just absolutely, such a blast.
Yes, this is very fun. The mirror image of seeing a Terminator or a Santa Claus suit. I don't know how they didn't melt his beard, but they melted his skin off. I have questions there. That's okay, though. This is a very fun time. It gives you, delivers exactly what you want based on the title.
Yeah, it really does.
And folks, that is it for the stack. If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, as well as get ad-free versions of them, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comics, Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice. To subscribe, listen, and follow the show, comicbookclublive.com. For this podcast and many more, until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Yeah, thank you. Come on.